Shalom Chaverim. Baruch haba l'chol mekshevim. This is Dr. Duff Forbes, Rabbi Kehilat HaMashiach B'toch Yisrael. Welcome, my friends, to this program entitled Treasures from Tanakh. My dear friends, misunderstanding is a parthenogenetic female possessing progeny the most perverted. Among her unhappy daughters are mischief, misrepresentation, and misdeed. Let me tell you about a most pathetic misunderstanding which could have had tragic consequences. It happened thousands of years ago, but, although embedded in history so ancient, it nevertheless yields two imperishable treasures, a salutary reflection and a startling revelation. We will absorb the reflection in this message and view the revelation in that message immediately succeeding. It all happened this way. Way back in the days of Moses, whilst the children of Israel were on the way to the promised land west of the River Jordan, they came into sight of some unrivaled pasture lands east of that river. The tribes of Reuben and Gad were the most pastoral of all Israel's children, and during their wanderings, their cattle and flocks had increased very considerably. The magnificent pasture-fat tablelands of Gilead constituted an allurement far too strong for these tribes to resist. The threatening power of Midian, east of Jordan, had been broken, and all borders seemed safe from attack, and the way well open to occupy and enjoy these wide upland pastures. Surely no land of promise could gladden the eye more than these delectable parklands. Accordingly, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben petitioned Moses eagerly and urgently to bestow upon them this fertile eastern territory. Let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan, they said. Moses was immediately smitten with apprehension. Would divided interests and divided activity threaten seriously the divine command to conquer and occupy Canaan? His concern is apparent in his prompt retort to the request. Shall your brethren go to the war, and ye sit here? And wherefore will ye turn away the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Eternal hath given them? Thus did your fathers, when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land, and the Eternal's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander to and fro in the wilderness 40 years. Moses' concern was undoubtedly understandable, for this petition presented a problem of perilous potentiality. But did Moses understand the petitioners? I cannot say, for who knows their first intentions? However, they gave Moses a solemn pledge that their warriors would accompany and fight with the rest of Israel across the Jordan, and not return to the eastern possessions they solicited until the children of Israel should have inherited every man his inheritance. I imagine it was not without misgivings that Moses granted the petition and assigned to them provisionally the ancient kingdoms of Sion and Og, east of Jordan. The point to note here is that these tribes of Reuben and Gad, together with half the tribe of Manasseh, who joined with them in eastern inheritance, became suspect merely because of their choice. After the death of Moses, these 2.5 tribes repeated to Joshua their solemn pledge of loyalty to Israel and wholehearted assistance in the attainment of Israel's divine objectives. But more, they acknowledged the Eternal God of Israel in their solemn assurances to Joshua. They kept their word and played a valiant part in the subjugation of Canaan. So much so that when the time came for them to leave the land west of Jordan and cross the river to their eastern possessions, the great warrior Joshua himself uttered words of warm commendation. "Ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Eternal, commanded you, and have hearkened unto my voice in all that I commanded you. Ye have not left your brethren." What glorious commendation! Loyal not only to Moses, but also to the one divinely chosen to succeed him in leading Israel into his inheritance. Even more, they had maintained a wholehearted identity of interests with their brethren, whom they had not deserted for a moment. How sad that those who possessed such qualities, and who proved themselves worthy of such words, could ever have been suspect. They had not left their brethren. But that wretched jade, misunderstanding, was to inflict upon them a yet greater injustice. Joshua had dismissed these proven and faithful warriors with his exhortation and blessing, charging them to love the God of our fathers, to walk in his ways, keep his commandments, and cleave unto him, serving him with heart and soul. He had bidden them take with them their hard-earned war spoils, to share with their brethren who were guarding the women and children in the fortified cities east of Jordan. Joshua's heart must have been heavy as he watched them depart from the central sanctuary of God at Shiloh on their journey to their eastern possessions. No doubt the hearts of the departing tribes were equally sad. Theirs had been such a blessed unity with the other tribes. Perhaps impulsively, they decided to do something that would demonstrate to all generations on both sides of Jordan their continued oneness with their brethren. Close to their line of march from Shiloh to Gilead, and about 20 miles north of Jericho, on a lofty summit towering above the Jordan Valley, they erected a great altar that could be seen far and wide. How pathetic that it was this same warm-hearted act which gave opportunity for destructive misunderstanding to spawn indignation and alarm in the hearts of the western tribes of Israel, those very people for whom this altar had been erected by the eastern tribes as a permanent monument of their identity and sympathy with and attachment to their brethren. It was to be a witness to the fact that they were co-heirs with them, and was intended as a memorial establishing a link between the land of the 2.5 tribes and the land of the rest of Israel. It was nothing short of malignant misunderstanding, then, that gathered the western tribes together at Shiloh with the actual intention of going to war against those same 2.5 tribes who had so consistently demonstrated their unity and trustworthiness. They jumped to the hasty conclusion that a schismatic altar had been erected, contrary to the express commands of which we read in Leviticus 17 and in Deuteronomy 12, and which prescribed a centralized sacrificial service, the breach of which might bring divine punishment upon all Israel in consequence. Hence, the armed men of the various western tribes assembled for warlike action against Reuben, Gad, and eastern Manasseh. What a terrible thing if misunderstanding had been as blind as prejudice and intertribal war had resulted. Why didn't those so hasty in their conclusions stop to ponder the fact that this allegedly schismatic altar had been erected on the western, not the eastern, side of the river? Fortunately, in conformity with the same laws of Israel, before resorting to violence, a deputation consisting of the high priest's son, Pinchas, and 10 chosen heads representing each western tribe, was commissioned to cross the Jordan to Gilead and expostulate with the 2.5 tribes and demand an explanation of what was construed by them as apostasy, meshumadut, towards the God of Israel. The accused tribes uttered a vehement protest against the interpretation which had been placed upon their action. It was not an altar of sacrifice they had erected. Their conduct had been wholly misunderstood. Not as a token of separation from the tabernacle and worship of the God of Israel, neither as a symbol of disunity with their brethren had this altar been erected. On the contrary, being erected on the western side of Jordan, it was intended as a witness and memorial to all generations that the 2.5 tribes formed an integral part of Israel and acknowledged none but the God of Israel. This frank avowal not only cleared away the cloud of misunderstanding, but moved all concerned with great emotion. To have been on the scene at the time would have been a very touching experience. It was a witness of unity and identification, it was discovered, not the contrary. I understand this memorial can still be seen today, projecting like a white bastion towards the river. The Talmud refers to it as Sotebeh, and the ascent is called Tal at Abu Ed, the going up to Ed. The word Ed means witness. My dear friends, beware of misunderstanding. There are, and from the inception have been, many Jewish people who believe not only in Moses, but also in the one like unto Moses of whom Moses speaks in Deuteronomy 18, Moses' great successor, the Messiah Yeshua, the one divinely appointed to lead both Jew and Gentile together into the spiritual promised land of eternal redemption from sin. Moreover, those of us Jewish people who so believe are equally persuaded that we have received our inheritance by authority from Moses himself. And the heavenly Joshua, the Messiah, has surely confirmed this to us in our personal experience. Let there be no misunderstanding. Please realize that it can truly be said of us, as of the 2.5 tribes, ye have not left your brethren. Yivarecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. Ya'er Adonai panav elecha vihunecha. Yisar Adonai panav elecha v'yasayim lecha shalom. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Amen.